This recording is a production of Faith Builders Educational Programs. This presentation was recorded at Teachers Week 2015, held at Faith Builders on August 4 through 7.
Well, good morning. It's a blessing to be here and share with you this morning. The title may be a little bit ambiguous, and probably so, because it's a little bit hard to describe. We're going to take couple of different smidgets from here and there and everywhere and try to bring them into the biblical model or the Proverbs writer's discussion about knowledge, understanding, and wisdom. And so the goal this morning is to simply give you a few word pictures and a few models for you to have running in the back of your mind as you teach. This is not an ABC, 1, 2, 3, do this and do that type of thing. Rather, it's theoretical ideas for you to take and to keep in the back of your mind to have running, hopefully in the background, as you're teaching in your classroom this year. Learning is complex. The interplay of information exchange between the teacher and the student can be grueling, or it can be delightful depending on the method of delivery. So I want you to think about a couple of word pictures here and what you're like as a teacher. I just pulled some ideas or thoughts. You know, sometimes we teachers say we're pumping facts. Okay, so is that what you're supposed to do as a teacher? What does pumping facts conjure up in your mind when you think about that? If a teacher says they're pumping facts, who do you call if something goes wrong when you're pumping facts? Plumber? Principal? Okay. So I'm not sure what we mean when we say we're pumping facts, but sometimes we use that that word picture. Another picture that may be helpful or useful, or maybe not, is that the teacher is something like an information vendor. You're the source, okay? And the teacher or the students can view you and all of the wonderful things that you have encased in you. And, you know, if they push the right buttons, they can get the right things out of you. And you're the source, and you vend out this information. Maybe the other method might be, ever hear a teacher talk about delivering a full load today? You know, they really gave it to the students. They had a lot to deliver. And so maybe this is the truck driver method. And all of these word pictures, I think, are faulty. They focus on the idea or the concept that you're taking something and you're moving it from one place to another. You're transferring it. If you're the truck driver, if you believe in the truck driver method, I do believe with the amount of information that we desire to give to our students, you're going to become an expert overload hauler. You know, it's always going to be too much. It's always going to be too wide and too high and overweight. And you're never going to be able to get accomplished what you would like to if you're trying to, you know, get everything on the load. So assuming that you can agree with me that all of these are quite faulty, I would like to suggest that there's a better word or a better word picture for all of you as talented teachers that are sitting here today, and that word is architect. And that puts us into maybe a different field, a different realm. You have a plan drawn up, okay, just like an architect. You have a blueprint to go by. Assuming that you're an architect that gets your hands dirty, you created the house, you made the blueprint, you drew it up, and now you're going to build it, okay? And so you have the right materials on hand. You got the block, the framing lumber, the siding, the shingles, and it's on the job site. You also have the right tools. You have a tape measure, saw, you have your air nailers. And of course, you can't do this on your own, so you have workers there, and they're going to assist you. You're going to lead them in this process of taking this pile of building materials and creating, constructing what you have envisioned, what you have planned, what you have designed on your paper, and it's going to become a reality. And so as a teacher, of course, you're not going to go to school and expect that there's a pile of lumber there for you to construct. This thing just seems to be giving a lot of feedback. Is closer better? Okay. So the materials that you have to work with may seem overwhelming, but assuming a lot of you are teaching elementary, the materials that you have to work with really are 26 letters and 10 digits. 26 letters and 10 digits. The tools that you have aren't going to be air nailers and tape measures and saws. They're going to be books, pencils, chalkboards, timelines, wall charts. Your workers are not your employees. They are your students. And you're going to inform them and lead them in a process of putting those 26 letters and 10 digits into all kinds of sequences, hopefully logical sequences that make sense to you as a teacher and in a logical way that makes sense to them as a student. So you are the architect here. You can't just give the blueprint to the students and say, here's the blueprint, here's the materials, go for it. Okay, you need to lead this process. The know-how, so to speak. You have the blueprint, you made the blueprint, and now we're gonna work this thing together. And so you show them how to use their tools appropriately and begin this building process. And the amazing thing is that once you start this process and they get their hands on those tools and they start using them, soon they're gonna be running ahead of you. They're gonna be creating things and doing things with the tools that you gave them, and they're going to be doing things that you didn't have to explain to them. They're going to be moving ahead of you and making connections that you maybe don't even have to make in their mind. And so we're far beyond pumping facts here and transferring information. We're teaching the proper use of tools and working towards that grand blueprint that you have made as the architect. So architect is a much better word picture for the teacher because it takes into account the concept that the teacher is leading a complex process that must be done in proper order for proper results. And the architect is a better word picture for the teacher. Architect, like the architect, sees a beautiful end result. Both the teacher and the architect know that the beautiful end result begins with very basic building blocks laid down in the solid ground, in the dirt, in the foundation. And then it's wall upon floor, tier upon tier, and roof upon wall. And you need to get the sequences correct here in order for your building to look correct. And your sequences need to be well planned as you plan, as you are the architect for your classroom this year and the learning that takes place there. Okay, so we have you, the architect. We have this building process that's in front of us. And for the rest of our time here, we just simply want to look at a few models that have been given and suggested as to what happens in the learning process. It gives the idea, these models give the idea that there are tiers of learning, that there are lower levels of learning and there are higher levels of learning. And that's not to say that the lower levels of learning are not important. If you're teaching elementary, certainly they are. They have to be there. The foundation does have to be laid, and it has to be laid very securely, very carefully, and very appropriately. And so on the handout, we have the models that I plan to talk about. The first one is a popular model, which many of you probably have encountered already, and it's called Bloom's Taxonomy of the Cognitive Domain. And I copied it for you because I don't use PowerPoint and all those grand things, so I figured you might not be able to see it, but you can at least see the outline here. Bloom's taxonomy here was created by a man named Benjamin Bloom in 1956, and his goal was to create what he called higher forms of thinking in education. Sometimes we refer to this as critical thinking skills or higher order thinking skills. If you're into acronyms, I guess that's HOTS, higher order thinking skills. If you don't want to write that all out, you can create your acronym. And it was actually one of his students that led a process by which they revised this in the 1990s. Very small changes were made to it. They relabeled a number of the levels here or tiers that were on the old version and came up with what we have now as a new version of Bloom's taxonomy. Now, a lot of times you'll see this depicted as a triangle, meaning that the lower levels possibly are more important in volume than the upper levels. You need to build well at the lower levels before you can reach those higher levels. It can also be depicted as a wheel. There's all kinds of different ways that this has been constructed and depicted. Now, how can this be of help to you? Notice that there are six tiers here, and I'm going to be referring to the new version. We have the remembering, understanding, applying, analyzing, evaluating, and creating. And in all of these levels, you'll notice that the words, which you may not be able to read off to the right here, are all what kind of words? All of the descriptive words, they are verbs, okay? And actually, that's what this chart is titled, Verbs from Bloom's Taxonomy. And so these one-word action verbs can be used to define the activities that a student may be involved at in each of these levels. And so if your student is defining or duplicating or listing or memorizing something, we're at the remembering level. We're at the low level here. If you're asking a student to classify or describe or discuss or explain, we've taken them up a notch. We're at the understanding level. They have to, in a way, sort things out a little bit to progress to this level. And then the third level is the applying level, where we may ask a student to choose, demonstrate, dramatize, employ, illustrate, use, or write. I like the write. You're asking the student to actually use the tools that you have been teaching them, those letters, those numbers, to write something. Then going on, we have analyzing, to appraise something, compare, contrast, criticize, differentiate, discriminate. So the words possibly get a little larger or a little more loaded maybe as you go up in the levels here. Evaluating, appraise, argue, defend. You'll notice that especially in the upper categories, there's a bit of overlap in the describing words. I guess we're running out of words to sufficiently describe what is happening at each of these levels. Seems to me like analyzing and evaluating are very much the same. And then the new version says that creating is the icing on the top. It's the best thing that can be done. A student will assemble, construct, create, design, develop, formulate, or write. Now, just a general statement about this. All students at all grade levels are capable of all of activities on all of these levels, okay? All students at all grade levels are capable of doing things on all of these levels. So don't think you're going to go with lesson plan A, and we're going to cover this today, and then lesson plan B, we're going to take it up a notch tomorrow, and lesson plan C goes up another notch. These are processes that cycle and cycle, and you're doing all of these things, maybe not all of them, but many of them at the same time in your teaching. Now, the very practical aspect of this is that when you walk into the classroom, you're the architect, you have made the plan, you have the plan, and that's called your lesson plan. And that lesson plan should have a purpose statement or an objective, whatever you call that. And it's what the student is to accomplish or learn in this lesson today. And so when you're looking, when you're creating a lesson objective, okay, when you're creating, see, you're way up here, you're the teacher. You're creating this lesson plan, and you're thinking about an objective for your lesson. These verbs are very, very helpful, because the reason that you teach is not because you have something to say and you want a bunch of people to listen to you. The reason that you teach is because when you're done, you want the student to be able to do something that they were not able to do before. Okay? And so when you're making your lesson plans and you're looking for that right word to put in your lesson plan there, what is the objective of your lesson? Well, you have a whole list of multiple choice here that you can go to. What is it that I really want the student to do today? And it might be to memorize, okay? It might be very simple. It might be on the lowest level, and that's perfectly fine. Don't beat yourself up if you're teaching, especially in the lower grades, and much of your many of your objectives fall in the lower levels. That is appropriate. Just an example here. You might be teaching first grade or second grade, and you're teaching or reviewing the letter A. And so, well, that's pretty simple. I'm going to go and I'm going to teach a student the letter A today. Well, that might be your thought, but your lesson objective could be much more precise and pointed than that. How about this? After this lesson is complete, the student will be able to recognize, and we'll use words from here, recognize the letter A, reproduce its short sound, classify it as a vowel, and write it in manuscript form, or cursive, I guess, depending what you're teaching. Okay? So four things. It takes a vague idea. I'm going to teach them the letter A today, and it puts four actions that they should be able to do when you're done with this lesson today. Okay? So you see how this model helps to move us from... It's a tool. It's a tool for you as you go to the classroom, and it's a tool for you to bring about that blueprint, that architecture that you're building into the students. Another sample could be, after this lesson, the student will be able to list the steps of the scientific method and demonstrate how the experiment that they have created meets the criteria. So we've spread ourselves across many of the levels there. We begin by listing and demonstrating and then creating. And whether they actually did a science experiment or they came up with a sample, they could do that in a fairly short amount of time. So these are continual processes that the students go through in their learning, and you should in your teaching. I do see, I think, a three-part breakdown in Bloom's taxonomy here. This is completely my thought. In just looking at this, it seems to me like there's a construction, deconstruction, reconstruction process that is going on here. And what I see here is that the remembering, understanding, and applying is a what I would call a construction process. You are constructing, you're building, you're putting together, you're moving towards a whole. Okay, you're in a lot of ways, your teaching is complete when you've reached the application stage, when you've reached the application level. I like to compare and contrast things. In the upper grades, you might teach a Bible study method that's observation, interpretation, and application. And I think I could see a lot of comparison here where we have observation, interpretation, and application. And we put that into practice, we use it. The value, though, of the next part here, I see the analyzing and evaluating as what I'm going to call a deconstruction. Now, if you're a builder, you're the architect, and you dreamed up the house and you build it, what do you do as soon as it's done? Or if you've ever built a house and you say, well, if I ever build another house, I know that I'm going to do this, that, or the other thing different, right? So as soon as that architect has that house built, he immediately begins to analyze, and in his mind, he tears it back apart again, right? And so he says, you know what? The next time we build a house, we're going to make sure we put that little block in behind the plumbing on the shower so that when the homeowner needs to change the, you know, that thing, the shower spout or the tub spout, you're supposed to be able to buy new ones and slide them on, okay? And guess what? My house doesn't have that blocker in the back, and so I had to get a new one. The one that was on was broken, and I can slide it on, and the pipe goes back against something back there, but I can never get that tub spout on the whole way because there's play back there, okay? And so I know that, well, I actually did it just a couple weeks ago at our little cabin that we had. I made sure that one was installed correctly before we drywalled it, okay? So whenever we have to change that tub spout, it's going to go back again so that every time I'm showering, I don't have to see that there's this gap between the tub spout and the tub and wonder how much water is getting down there and what it's doing to the floor down there. Thought about caulking it. You know, that'd be a lot of silicone. Guess that would work for a time. All right, so anyhow, the architect, after he's, in a sense, done with the project, he immediately begins to tear it apart and say, how can I do better next time? How can I improve this? So there's a deconstruction that takes place where you ask, how did this work? Why did this work? Why did it not work? What if we did it this way? What if we did it a little bit of a different way? And then I see the creating as a reconstruction where this architect is going to, he's going to dream up another house. He's going to build another house, and it's going to be better than the first one that he built before. Any comments quickly on blooms? I know we're just kind of flying through here, but it can be a very helpful tool to be used, especially in lesson planning, something very practical. Okay, if not, we're going to move to the next model. And this was a model that I learned to appreciate from Kevin Washburn from Clear Story Learning. And he also is the author of The Architecture of Learning, which I should give the disclaimer. I actually never read his book. I've heard him speak numerous times, had the chance to be in a workshop that ended up being very small. There was like 10 of us there where Dr. Washburn was giving this presentation. So got to talk with him about it and pick his brain quite a bit about it. If you read his book, Architecture of Learning, it's extremely complex. And assuming that you don't teach the same subject over and over and over again, and that you're a teacher from a highly specialized school, and the only thing you teach is math or science, his method is going to be too complex for you. You're not going to be able to take every lesson plan and get all of his 16 grid parts onto every lesson plan. It's not going to work. You're going to burn yourself out. But this is very basic illustration of his explanation of how learning occurs. First of all, he says there's experience. In other words, there's things that happen. There's input of data. It's what the five senses take in. This happens all the time. If you're alive, this is happening. Okay, you all had certain experiences today already. After those experiences happen, there is a classification that takes place. There's a sorting and labeling process. Some of you had some experiences today that you've already forgotten. They're gone and past, and you won't remember them again. Some of you had some experiences, and you said, "Oh, I need to remember that." Okay, so how am I going to remember that? And you did something about that, probably. Some of you might be thinking about that right now, thinking about how you're going to remember that because you didn't write it down, or you didn't get to the right place to write it down, or you didn't get to talk to the right person to bounce this idea off of yet. And so we classify, we sort and label information. We put the lesson into context, so to speak. And then he says there is elaboration, which connects and blends the new and the known. And elaboration in his model, elaboration to me, is a key to what happens in our teaching. Elaboration is, in a sense, it's always reaching backward to go forward. It's connecting the new, what you want to go forward to, and the known. Students can't move forward. You can't build the floor until you have the basement walls up. And as a teacher, you're going to go through this continual process of reaching back to move forward. And that's what elaboration is, connecting and blending the new and the known. One of the words that Kevin Washburn uses here is contextual blending. And he goes on to describe what that means. In elaboration, we identify and use patterns to blend the new information with the old information. You're presenting something new, but you're reaching back and continually pointing back to how this sets a pattern by which you can move forward. And then application is to show understanding. Practice, the students can demonstrate or reduplicate the lesson in real life. I tried to give a file drawer analogy here. Experience could be like a pile of papers with information on them, and comprehension could be opening the file drawer and putting the folder in. You just open a drawer and put it in somewhere, anywhere. It's hanging, okay? It's in the file. Elaboration, then, would be opening the file drawer and opening the folder and retrieving the paper and getting that paper out of this folder and putting it in another folder because you have reclassified, you've reorganized, you've said this one doesn't fit here, it fits over here. You connect and blend the new and the known. And application, that's why we use file cabinets, right? Because we have all these papers that we think we might need or we will need. And so we want to know that when it's time to find that paper, we open the file, we open the folder, we retrieve the paper that's needed for the current situation. And if it's not there or wasn't filed correctly, you know, you're upset. It should have been there. Roughly, I see in Kevin Washburn's model that the biblical word descriptions flow right along here in that comprehension is knowledge, elaboration is understanding, and application is wisdom. Now, I can do, we'll do this, I guess. Just to illustrate the idea of elaboration here, connecting and blending the new and the known, I can send you away today with a song that will teach you what elaboration is, and you may or may not like me for it because it's going to take one of the songs that I'm sure you know, and every time you hear that tune, you are going to now take along some new words with that song, okay? And hopefully it reminds you of what elaboration is. So let's all stand, and assuming that you know the song, if you're happy and you know it, let's sing the first verse of that, and you can clap your hands. So if you're happy and you know it, clap your hands.
If you're happy and you know it, clap your hands. If you're happy and you know it, then your life will surely show it. If you're happy and you know it, clap your hands.
Okay, now the next, the last part of the little talk here today is to teach you three Hebrew words, and they are yada, binya, and chokma. Now, this is a little, if you go home and study this, it's a little bit torn out of proportion. The Hebrew word for knowledge is really da'ath, D-A-A-T-H. But it comes from the root word yada, and then the word for understanding is B-I-N-Y, but one of the extensions of that word is binya. And I don't know if I'm saying these right. Probably didn't twist my tongue and, you know, do enough of Hebrew stuff to do justice to these words. And wisdom is chokma. So I was driving somewhere thinking about this one time. This song came to my mind. And so now you can go home or try to go to sleep tonight, and this will be running through your mind. So let's sing together. Yada, 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 binya chokma. Yada, 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 binya chokma. Yada, 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 bin, yada, 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 bin, yada, 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 ma. Okay, let's sing that again. We're holding out on the chokma there, not saying it quickly. Let's sing verse 1 again, and we'll go on to verse 2. Yada, 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 binya chokma. Yada, 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 binya chokma. Yada, 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 bin, yada, 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 bin, yada, 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 binya chokma. Now, verse 2. And we're only clapping one time. Maybe that's a distinction I should make. The emphasis is on the last syllable, and then you clap once. Do you got a lot of yada binya chokma? Do you got a lot of yada binya chokma? Do you got a lot of yada? Do you got a lot of binya? Do you got a lot of yada binya chokma?
And verse 3. This is what you're supposed to do this year.
Go beyond the yada to the binya chokma. Go beyond the yada to the binya chokma. Go beyond the yada yada, learn more than yada yada. Go beyond the yada to the binya chokma.
Okay, so if you have the song, you may sit down. Now that you have the song down, you really don't need to listen to the last part because I just taught you what I'm going to teach you, I guess. And that is Proverbs 14, verse 6, uses the word knowledge, understanding, and wisdom, and actually a number of the roots of those words quite often throughout the verse. It says, a scorner seeketh wisdom, chokma, and findeth it not, but knowledge, da'ath, or the yada, knowledge is easy unto him that understandeth, binya. Go from the presence of a foolish man when thou perceives, and the word perceive there is actually the word yada, when you perceive, when you see, not in him the lips of knowledge, da'ath. The wisdom, or the chokma of the prudent, is to understand, binya, his way, but the folly of fools is deceit. And so yada, binya, or chokma is used 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 times just within these two verses in Proverbs 14:6. So the word knowledge in the Hebrew comes from the root word yada. It means to know. It literally means to ascertain by seeing. To ascertain by seeing. You know it because you see it. And it includes the idea of observation, care, and recognition. And so knowledge comes from revelation. And revelation uncovers something. We have God's revelation. We wouldn't know many of the things that we know, except God has revealed it to us. And so, in a lot of ways, you as a teacher, you stand as the revealer to your students. You know many things that they don't know. You're the architect, and you have many things in your plan that they have no other way to know, except that you're going to bring it to them in a wise way. So you as a teacher, in many ways, are the revealer. You're bringing the yada to the classroom, the facts, the things that they need to know, the knowledge. And so knowledge in many ways is, I believe, what to think. It's the facts. It's the way things are. It's the way the universe is created. We've learned many facts about the universe in our main sessions. Understanding, then, is the word binya from the root word be. I don't know how you say it other than bin. I don't know how to say B-I-Y-N. It's from the root word bin, and it means to separate mentally, to distinguish, to attend, consider, direct, or discern. Understanding, to separate mentally. You're making a distinction. You're beginning to say, you know, here are the facts, but there's a distinction that needs to be made about this set of facts that we're talking about here. There's a second definition for understanding, and it's a word tabukum, so sorry, it's not in the song, you won't remember this. And that has the idea of reasoning. It literally means an argument. It's the idea of using reason to order your facts, so to speak. You have a line of reason. Sometimes we talk about linear thinking. One thing builds on the next, so that you come to a logical conclusion. And so understanding requires consideration, reflection, discernment. A person's understanding is demonstrated by good linear reasoning or good argumentation that supports what they're trying to say. A person of understanding can do more than just repeat the facts. Okay, see how this is relating to Bloom's taxonomy? We're stepping it up here a little bit. This person can do more than just repeat the facts. He can demonstrate by his reasoning how one set of facts correlates to the other. Understanding goes beyond knowledge and comprehension. But it climbs up Bloom's taxonomy to analyze, synthesize, and evaluate. I think in the biblical model here, understanding is analyzing, synthesizing, evaluating. So understanding is how to think about what I know. Knowledge is what to think, but understanding is how to think about what I know. And as teachers, it is very different to teach a student what to think, and it's a whole other thing to teach them how to think. That should be your goal. And then wisdom. Wisdom means to be skillful and wise. It's really hard to define wisdom, actually. It has the idea to be wise in mind, word, or act. Wisdom is only something that can be proven. I have a hard time maybe getting this across. Wisdom refers to the heart. It refers to the center of anything. Wisdom is a demonstration of the knowing. Wisdom is knowledge and understanding with life inside of them. Wisdom is knowledge and understanding translated into real life. Wisdom is a proof of what dwells at the very core of our mind, will, and emotions. Somewhere I'm missing a piece of my notes that I remember putting in here this morning. It's this. We're going to get there. Wisdom is how to live what I think and know. Wisdom is how to live what I think and know. And so how should these definitions, how should the concept of knowledge, understanding, and wisdom impact the way that I approach school? I think we can make a distinction between listening and observing. What are your students doing? Are they listening? Are they observing? Listening can become a very passive activity very quickly, okay? But the idea of knowledge here, to gain knowledge, you gain that by, you ascertain it by seeing, okay? We're observing here. And so if you can keep your students engaged in an active process like observation, it's better than, quotes, just listening. In the area of understanding here, we could think of it this way. Do you send your students home with just a big pile of facts? Or do you send them home with a big drawer of facts that has file folders labeled in alphabetical order? It has a way for them to organize what you've taught them. Or did you just deliver the truckload and say, here it is, okay? Wisdom cannot be taught. This is what I was thinking about earlier. I'm not sure about this statement, and you can help me with it. The statement I have in my notes is that wisdom cannot be taught. It can only be demonstrated because it is living out of our center. It's living out of our hearts. In other words, the idea here is that you can't take wisdom and take it from one person and translate it to another person. You can't just, it's not a commodity that you can deliver from one person to another. A person can only accomplish it or gain it by proper knowledge and understanding as they build, so to speak, the tiers of their knowledge, understanding, and wisdom. Wisdom is a correct use of knowledge and understanding in real life. Just because we infuse students with knowledge and understanding does not mean that it will be put to correct use. It is much more likely to be put to correct use if they see us demonstrating the correct use of knowledge and understanding in our lives. And I think that's what made the previous workshop very important. I wasn't here for everything, but there was all kinds of tools that were used in all kinds of different ways to give illustrations to our students about how to live their lives as we give them devotionals each day. So, in conclusion, a couple of things. We cannot open our students' hearts and dump the right products in to ensure that they have wisdom. What we can do is demonstrate wisdom by the way that we live. As students follow our habits and patterns, wisdom works itself into their lifestyle and begins to reside at their center. And so as you think about the word pictures and models we talked about here today, as you get back into the school year and you're in the thick of it, hit the pause button for an afternoon or some night and stop and reflect and ask yourself, am I just pumping facts? Am I just delivering information? Or am I truly doing my job as an architect who is teaching line upon line, precept upon precept, moving forward by moving backward, moving forward by reaching backward, and really moving my students forward to what we could call higher levels of learning. Teach knowledge, construct understanding, live wisdom. Three things for you to do this year. Teach knowledge, construct understanding, and live wisdom. Thank you.
This recording and many others are available through Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. Order online at www.christianlearning.org or call 877-222-4769.